That thing has been off all along.
Yeah.
I wanted him to get a talking drum.
Right.
That's a drum, and you beat it with, but in going, you know, I get hooked up in these several things. I went over to the University of Pittsburgh a couple of years ago to a networking forum of American and the African.
Okay, okay.
And I got to talking to some of the Africans. So I said, incidentally, I had known this all the time. The drumming that they do is passed down from generations. Now the drum that my son plays is the djembe, but then they got other types of hand drums.
Right, right.
So if my father played it, then I played that. And we all had a certain rhythmical pattern that we played.
Yeah,
so when you put the whole thing together, yeah, you had a ring. So I asked this guy, now he had a doctorate degree. So I says, what about the African drum? I said, the talking drum. That's a rather sophisticated thing.
Right.
All right, you remember Olatunji?
Yeah.
When he was here? Later on, I found that he got into trouble with the tribe about over here.
Right.
See, I met Olatunji. He came to school I was working, and he had these drums, or for certain
They're
things.
Religious.
Yeah, religious.
Cultural things, right.
And then there's a talking drum, the big one, how they sent it. And he wasn't supposed to come over here and put
do
that on the mic. And you don't hear no more about Olatunji.
Yeah. But it's, you know, but it's, see, part of, like, that African drumming business, because we got a couple guys around here, like that John L. is one in particular that, you know, and I mean, whether or not these guys research the authenticity of what's supposed to happen with these instruments, but they'll come up and they'll just play anything, and, and because you and I don't know, I mean,
you know what they told me over there? I said, you know, I'd like to get the basic fundamental. They said, well, now on Forbes Avenue, we got a place. I think it's hooked up with the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
He said, you go over there and talk to them. And he said, every now and then, one of the brothers will
come
through, and they will take your name, and they will connect you with them. I found out the same way with the Indians.
Right.
Them Indian drummers, they get a different effect. But they have concerts over there, Stephen Foster Hall, that are supported by them, and all Indian drums. I missed the bet. I didn't go to hear this particular Indian. And they played in things like we played violin. But just always remember about Olatunji. He did say he went against the grain. They didn't forgive him for that.
Well, that, because a lot of that, you know, was in like down in the Caribbean with the religious rituals and the dances and things that they do, and you know, that's, a lot of that stuff is not to be shared. You know, it's not to be, you know, played with. You know, it's sacred.
Can I say this to you? I never said nothing to Joe because I hadn't seen him to talk to. His accompanist. Now I like the piano, James Johnson. Like Joe.
Well,
not the bass and Alico.
Okay.
I know for the tunes that he was playing that there was some of
something was missing.
Yes, that could have put.
Well, what had happened, the saxophone, the tenor player that was supposed to work with him is
Alico's
Kenny Powell.
Son?
No, black guy, Kenny Powell. But he got married on the 15th and he had things coming up and he had to back out. So that's how Joe got Don Alico Sr. To make the job.
Yeah.
And incidentally, Kenny Powell was supposed to be playing a show with me out here, see? But his wedding was last week on the 15th, and then he's went away on his honeymoon and so forth, and so he had to back out of the show. And his wife, the girl that he married, was also in the show. So she had to back out. So that's how we get this this young replacement. This Maria Coates Bay has replaced Sheffy, and then Jay Willis, and something that I hate to say it about our brother musicians, but if you can't read, you can't read, and there's no point in accepting the thing. I mean, I'd rather
you can.
Just back away.
Admit it. Back away. But you got them there, brazen.
you know, and it's a drag. I mean, and particularly for the amount of money that they're paying for this show, you know, and for us to come up, because we're not playing it. And this little kid, I had a couple words with him Sunday night. Well, first of all, I've been trying to get Jay Willis straightened out. Mm-hmm. I said, because I can't say anything to the bass player or the drummer until we get our thing locked in.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we went through a week.
Well, what happened? Kenny Fisher don't get none of them gigs.
Kenny can't see. See, Kenny's got his bad eyes. His vision is bad. And then Kenny's not a good reader. Kenny's not a good reader.
Oh, well, that's
see,
that
I mean, heavy, the majority of guys that you know of that you see, like, run up on a grill or Carl's or in these joints, they sound good, you know, playing that.
But
if
you
open up
paper,
a piece of paper in front of them, it's a different story.
Hey, look here, man, tell me this. I got the Fincher's number.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call him and see if he won't pick me up and ride me out.
Fine.
Yeah,
fine.
I'm going to get and
fine.
It's every night.
Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah.
So tomorrow night through Sunday, and we got three more weeks.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to go?
No, I'm looking.
Oh.
My man, he's running late. You know, I see his car.
Okay.
No, I'll call him when I get home.
But we got three more weeks to go on this thing.
I got
thing.
To get out there.
Please.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Because I was talking to John, and I had mentioned to him, and I would like for you to come out. Because it's Black Vaudeville is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It was taken in the 30s. That's that the period of time.
Is part of it?
No. But it's a good show. You'll enjoy it. You'll dig it. But I'll tell you. After last Thursday, the other thing you mentioned, I want to check on the liquor license.
Yeah.
And I guess...
In around 1940 is when they made the application. Yeah,
okay.
Because formally we opened up in 42. It took, we had a lot of mishaps.
Yeah, a lot of time, right. Okay.
What happened, they had a boy, but see what happened when they were making... When they made the application, Leroy and Joe Porter and them and run as an after-hour joint.
Okay.
And
did we own the building?
No, Gus Greenlee owned
Gus,
the building.
That's what somebody... Okay, from the grill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his uncle was the janitor there. Gus Greenlee owned it. Before it was that, it was the Paramount Club. I used to gig down there.
Okay.
They had a chorus line,
Paramount.
Club,
this is good. Okay. And 12, what was it, 12 what?
12, 13,
12,
Wiley.
13.
Wiley.
He did something. Okay.
See, I was in the north, in the Iron City Elks. They called it the Portico Anthem.
Right.
And the Elks had long amended there so they could get a liquor and take an associate member.
Okay.
I had just passed the audition to get into the WPA band, September 1939. And President, this is where they held their meetings. So as a result, Pres would always be hanging around. And I was in the room showing him that I'd passed the audition and I... Because it comes through the union, but it wasn't nothing that the blacks did, but by the whites knowing about the program, they alerted us. See, when it originally started off, Earl Wallace, Floyd Fitch, it was about four of them played in the WPA concert band.
Right.
But they wasn't cutting the sheet.
Right.
So, some openings came in the what they call the jazz band.
Okay.
Which was Doc Brass.
And the WPA band had nothing to do with the union.
The union was responsible for them getting the grant.
Okay.
You had to be union.
Okay.
To get
right.
into
to get into
that.
The WPA band.
Right.
Okay.
So this guy called Robinson, we used to call him Kingfish, say, hey, Brass, you all ought to be able to do the same thing as we're doing. You know, they've opened up the laws now where you can mess. And he said, well, I'll look into it.
Mm-hmm.
He had a fashion. He lived on Federal Street. He was a caretaker for some apartment buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to hang around the grill
mm-hmm.
like some of them did. he run right down and talked it over with Gus. In the meantime, Carney Post had a very good relationship with the political system. Okay. Colonel Farley was the safety director.
Okay.
So Brown and them took over and operated as an after-hour joint, just like, and did what they wanted and had their bartenders and made money there. If a bus comes, Farley would, Dave Robertson Pop, we, the dues paying members, had to foot the bill.
Right.
Because people like Jim Baldwin and all them, they wasn't even recognized as musicians. They wasn't even in the union.
Right.
But
right.
when this club took, they eased in and eased in.
Then, thank you.
Then it was a hard thing to get them to do right. At home, I got the minutes and the report that we did to try to bring the thing back into focus. And I don't know why I saved it. Duke Spaulding's name is on there. Joe Harris is in it. The piano player, Billy Brandt.
She's aging her.
For what? But
to get them to do right so we wouldn't.
You mean at the musicians' club?
Yeah, because they was running like after. And they didn't have no members tending bar or nothing.
Right.
They had street people. And they were bringing their own whiskey and selling it. I would never say that Brown or Brown them sold it, but they left it wide open and pushed the regular membership in the background. That's why I said Tony Mowat didn't steal that program that he got over there every Sunday.
Yeah.
We were licensed to do that.
Yeah, we were doing it. Yeah.
And they just frittered it away.
Yeah.
See, the bad move was when they left Wiley Avenue.
We went to East Liberty.
They had their $15,000-$20,000 in cash money, which they should have bought a building.
A place down on the hill. They should have.
Carl Arden and Ducky, they run out there. Ruby put her house up to get, and they didn't own nothing.
No, they didn't own it.
They had to pay for the equipment, and she almost got broke on that situation. You know Carl.
Oh, yeah. So as a result,
I know the history of how that came about and what we went to, and I saved these notes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
And I will bring them
because,
to that meeting.
Okay.
Because
what we can
see,
do
this is
just
where me and Ruby had a little hassle.
Okay.
See, when she got to be Secretary of Treasury, I had a beef about the way they was running
where
the club,
handling things.
And I went to Local 60, Haggerty.
Okay.
They said, well, now look, if you feel that you're being they sent me over to the lawyer's building to see
McGrath.
No, with Sigmund Rosenwasser.
Oh,
then.
Okay.
This was
okay.
in the 40s.
Okay.
And I remember he told me, he said, look, do you want me to write? He said, first of all, is there any money involved in the position?
Okay, well, wait a minute. You know what? I think what I'm going to do, because that, by mentioning 60 again, that document that I saw from the Musicians Club that's down there for in either 24 or whatever that date is, I think I'll get a copy of that also, because that might, it might, but the names on there was the only thing, see, and the way they write these things up, it's kind of general. They don't give any address or nothing,
no
particulars. It's a general kind of
thing.
All
they want is the signature.
Right.
But
when
now,
I saw
if you
those
get
signatures,
that and see the names, I can tell. But I know at the time that we did that, Prez was president, Belindis was secretary, treasurer. Ruby wasn't even in that position.
Right. Well, see, the thing of it is, there's no other records listed in the city recorder's office on the Musicians Club. I mean, there was,
it would come through the Liquor Control Board.
Okay.
And you go to them, they can tell you every license that was See, they can't throw those records off.
Okay.
And when you tell them,
I'm
giving
out.
You the year
okay.
in between to around 1940 or 41, because it opened for, I see my man.
All right, well, go ahead and catch
up. Hey, no, stay here,
all
I'm coming
okay.
back.
Okay, all right.
Not here, 25 years.
Right, right.
This was on my mind to do these kind of things. And I could have got that. What I'm trying to say is if they had it done right in the beginning, we could have hooked up way back then. But man, this is needed.
Well, see, unfortunately, you know, when we turned our records over to Local 60, and they just left them upstairs, and then when they decided to pitch everything, they just threw everything out. And in the meantime, they didn't begin to record anything because the dates and times of some of the older members is not authentic. Yeah. It's not true down there.
Just like if I went down to them and said, what year was Joe DeSanta a member of Local 60? They wouldn't have them.
I don't know, though. If he belonged to Local 60, they might have it because there's a girl down there in the office. She showed me, you know, those loose leaf, the thick ones. It took her 3 years, and she went through the final cards on Local 60 members.
Yeah.
But she's got a log because she opened it up. The first page
of the
was back.
Deceased members and
whatever, alphabetically and however, because she showed me.
See why that's important to me. If I can get the year that Joe DeSanta was a member, he was a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
That same time, Billy Butler got the same recognition.
Joe
DeSanta, that's Italian.
DeSanta.
Yeah. A drummer.
Right. I'll check that out.
Yeah. See, if I can get that, then I can associate him with Billy Butler.
Okay.
Because all of this happened, I'll say, in between 1916 and 1960 and say 25.
1915
to 1925.
Right.
1916 to 1925. They would fit in that
category. Okay,
in that area after this.
After that.
Yeah,
because I'm gonna check with. I'll go down to City County Building, and that one document that, because it's listed on the Musicians Club.
Yeah. Well, you check that out, and maybe you get the date.
And I'll just get have them send me a copy of that one, because that might have something to do with when, because maybe they did, you know, by Local 60 being the parent local.
Yeah.
Maybe they did have some say over our getting the Musicians Club.
Because we got our charter from them. See, that I remember Floyd Fitch telling me. See, Floyd was on the outside. He kept somebody else. He said, Kurt, if they ain't doing right by, why don't you go down to Local 60 and talk to Haggard? He said, because they were the parent local of us. They are the ones that issued the chart.
Okay.
So I'm going to follow through
on that. All right, I'll check. I'll get this other one on the Musicians Club. And then I'll see. I don't recall seeing anything else until I think it was 60. There's an amendment that Osgood, who was the past president, there's an amendment like in the mid 60s, 68 or 69, something like that, and that didn't have any bearing on us.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get to our beginning.
This is the ground. Right. This is it.
I think that's
Afro-American. Because that's what they referred to us.
That's what I thought. I remember hearing either Prez or somebody talking about, and then also talking, we got the charter, we got the charter. I remember that in my early days.
See, I have been involved with charter search and constitutional government.
Okay.
Excuse me, because I was president of AFSCME.
AFSCME, okay.
Local 290 School Board, public employees. And from my experience with the musician and being over there, they couldn't pull no wool off. What I found out, we don't stick together.
No.
But man, what you're doing is to be commended, because next year, the Historical Society is going to open up down in the strip.
They're
coming up from over there. Now, then there's another lady by the name of Slaughter, who has been trying to get an African American museum.
Mm-hmm. These things will fit in with that.
Now, I don't know if he's a relative or how you feel about it. You ever hear the name Frank Bolden?
Yeah, but see, Frank Bolden to me Frank is a historian on social activities in the Hill District, you know, because at Wiley Avenue days, you know, was kind of his project. But there, because, like I said, it came out about the name for Earl Garner, calling him Gumdrops and all that, and it was a little, you know, it was a little the way Frank Bowling put it out, it wasn't true.
Yeah.
It was another way. So my feelings are, I want this to be the musicians' thing from the musicians. This is
not
our story.
Some hearsay.
No.
See,
yeah.
I'll tell you what, why I know what I know is a girl on the staff to do the legwork for the African American.
Okay.
Pat Mitchell.
Okay.
When I did this video cassette out of King's House in 91, right away Nelson started sending me a book. I got the literature. And when I looked at what they had on record I said, ain't none of this true. So I called this Pat Mitchell and I told her who I was. And here comes Frank Bowling. Talk about the devil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have nothing to do. He don't even know me.
Yeah,
and tell him,
I know. That's
so
what I'm saying.
When I called this Pat, they had a picture there of the old Harlemites. They called it, wasn't the Harlemites. There was a band that went into the Harlem Casino.
Right, okay.
Teeny Harris took the photo, but he didn't get the names of the individuals.
Right, yeah.
So when she presented me, they've been passing them all over the city for years. So when she presented to me, I said, Wimpy was on as a trumpet player.
Yeah.
Also, Wimpy was a trumpet player. When the Eldridge Brothers come back here in 1932 to form a big band to take on the road, he was one of the trumpet players.
Yeah.
Bill Moses?
Yeah.
Because we played for Lee Matthews back in the 30s.
Yeah.
And like, I know all them guys.
Yeah.
But you see, I didn't get no work around there. So when I come back off the road with Big Maybell, I went to work for the school board.
Right, right.
Put in 34 years, and now I've been retired 60.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to help anybody that's going to put us in the record books as being right.
The right
now,
way.
This woman will need this kind of for that museum.
Well, see, I went to the Carnegie Library to search for whatever they had.
Yeah.
Now, in the music department, they didn't have any definite information on 471 or the Black, Musicians Union or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
They have some of the current journals, now with the Merge Local. She had some of those journals that they've been sending out.
Yeah.
And I told the woman, I said, unfortunately, when the Merge, from our local, our information was sent downtown and was lost. So I told her what I was trying to do and so forth. And she said, if you don't have any objections, after we get all this, she said, we would like to share some of this information. I said, right now, we're in the process of trying to glean all the information we can get. Okay, she sent me back into what they call the Pennsylvania room, because I'm trying to get the state information. And there, one of those little manila folders, and there was three little newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
And they were on the court case, and that was in the 70s, 68, 70, 72.
Yeah.
So that didn't mean anything. So they told me, try the Historical Society. I walked over to the boulevard, Bayard Street.
Yeah.
I went in, they sent me upstairs, and I talked to a woman.
Pat Mitchell? Yeah, that's the very one I talked to.
Where is it? I got the slip here. Anyway, here. Yeah. No, Sharon. I talked to Sharon. She's a black woman. Okay.
Yeah, that's her.
Okay. But anyway, when I talked to this woman, she showed me four or five folders, manila folders of newspaper articles and clippings and things. But there was nothing on local 471 the kind of information that we want.
Yeah.
There's articles on Earl Garner and George Benson and that we want.
Yeah.
Nothing. So I explained to her, and she gave me the name of a guy here. This Dave Goodrich, I think, is what Goodwin or Goodrich or something like that.
Yeah, Goodwin.
But he's supposed to be writing a book, Keys to the City, 1920-1954. Because she asked me, did I know him? And I said, no, the name didn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't even know whether this was out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to get to the library to see if it is out. But there's so many people that have been, giving me, leads on other people that, almost everybody's writing a book, but
that's
like I said, what we're trying to do is report the musicians' story.
Our history.
And believe me, this woman that John brought he brought last Thursday. I had a meeting with John and this woman from she's from Alcoa. Young white woman. Now I have an interview with her tomorrow at noon. I mean, breakfast, 9:30 down to Swickley Motoring.
Yeah.
But she did a, I meant to bring it, I forgot about it. I got so many things going on. But she brought a thing, and just like you said, the history of our thing, of what we contributed to the music scene and our culture and our, I mean, she's, you know, she's really, you
together,
know, yeah, she knows what's going on. Now, I'll tell you something, I want to kind of tip you off a little bit. Delcy's going to bring in some kind of a proposal that she's working on, and it has reference to do with this anniversary thing that Local 60 is having next year. Now, because I talked to Delcy for about an hour and a half Saturday, because I was so fired up over finding this, I called everybody I could think of. See, because I left a message on your box.
I played by there, you hold them for 30 days.
Yeah, well, anyway, so when I'm talking to her, she says, oh, yeah, well, what I'm trying to do, I want to get this thing going, and if we can have the book, you know, kind of, and I'm saying, wait a minute, Delcy, personally, I feel that, excuse me, a year is not enough time for us to come up with enough information, you know, to say anything.
Yeah.
Because I will not have gotten around to all the musicians in a year's time.
Right.
The ones that we need to talk to. Mm-hmm. So anyway, one word, and she said, I have this thing, the union, Phil has given her almost like a blank check to come up with some kind of presentation at this anniversary thing, and I guess it's supposed to represent local, the black side, 471. So I asked her, I said, well, wait a minute. Now, of the black members, I'll bet you 80% of them don't even know that next year is 60's anniversary.
See? Most of them don't.
And I'll bet you 95% of those don't even know that we're supposed to participate.
You're right.
Yeah, see?
Look, let me tell you this. It all ties in. Talking to this Pat Mitchell, in the year of 97 is going to be the first anniversary of the New Western Festival Historical Society.
Okay.
And I say this to say this to you. So I said to Pat, I said, look, okay, I got it. I said to Pat, I'm not here because when I write something, it's going to be my personal autobiography. But I am tired of the misinformation
somebody else put
that comes out to this society, which has no merit. She got a recorder up. I had to meet her here once. Now, we were supposed to meet here at a certain time. I had to call her house because she had forgotten.
Right. Yeah.
So, all right. I says, I just want to see the records. I showed her the correspondence, which I had from Nelson. You know, all of this. Nelson, behind that video cassette, and it's gonna, he probably got $5,000 over at the Historical Society. But he offered Fate Marable, that's the son of Fate Marable, Riverboat, and old man Roger named Casey Howard. They played the blues.
Yeah, because he's in the grill a lot.
Yeah, Casey.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
When he comes to me, on this, I'm going to bring you a copy of this VCR. Look. He says to me, $125. I was living on Melville Street there. Go offer me $125. So I talked it over. See, my people didn't get asked me to write this autobiography. They said, look, if you take that $125, any information
you get,
that
hey,
it
gone.
Becomes community.
That's right. It's probably
yeah, so he never paid me, but I know that he's sneaking and doing something. When they had this week, Ellington anniversary week and all that, doing the Melon Jazz, I met him coming out of the check mark. I heard, because he always hollers at me, and I see him and I don't see him. So he said, look here. Man, it's a wonderful thing to set up over there. And incidentally, I had used a little bit of that material that was used on that cassette. Now, I could sue him for plagiarism.
That's right.
Because he had no business. Right. And I'm going to give you, let you hear this copy.
Yeah.
Because that was when Bobby Boswell, but I knew Joe all the time. And I wouldn't have had a chance to do this had not the people who had promised Joe Ruby was going to tell about this. And they all backed out. So by knowing a guy named Bradshaw, he was going to be on it. He don't play no music, but he was around at the time. So Joe called me and said, "Can I, with your permission, give him your phone number?" So I went out and did the thing, and it was a great success.
Right, right.
But it's a lot of historical information
that's in there. Yeah.
How the change came with the Afro-American musician in the city of Pittsburgh.
Right. Because that's what needs to be given. That information needs to be given.
I got the cassette. Now, just like I tell you, anywhere that I see this publicized, they didn't get the permission
for me
to do it.
Right.
Fisher and them guys, they were so overwhelmed because I'm 10, 15, 20, I'm 79 years old, older than them. And when I started to tell them the story, I commanded their respect because I had gotten out of music.
Right.
Now, anybody...